Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies, the Talking Picture Podcast. Guess who's here for the next two podcasts? That's right. This week and next week, it's Lisa Rosman.
Hello, hello. My last name has a soft S in it.
After I said it, the second it rolled off
my tongue. They just met, ladies and gentlemen.
How soon they forget.
The second it rolled off my tongue, I said Rosman,
just
not Rosman.
But you were all excited. You're like the greatest showman. You're like Hugh Jackman here today without the looks and much older. The show is about one of the greatest.
You guys, let's all stumble verbally.
Anyway, here's what we're talking about today. Bill is the only one who saw The Greatest Showman, and he's going to mention some stuff about
how
that. But we've all seen The Post.
Thank you.
The Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep movie. We've all seen Maggie's Game, and we've all seen Downsizing. And that's what we're going to talk about. And Bill Bregoli is here.
Yes, I am.
And Bill McCuddy is here.
Present.
And what do we do on the show every week, Bill?
We listen to you not listen to the podcast.
And what else do we do?
We watch everything so you don't have
to. That's right. And who do we have an interview with this week, Bill Bregoli?
Well, let's see. We can talk to Tom Hanks about The Post.
No, that's great.
Yeah, so that's a good one.
Well, let's talk about The Post. Let's start with that one. Okay, so
a little background on it would be helpful with
Lisa,
this
Lisa, why don't you take the lead?
Well, you know, Spielberg usually germinates his projects for years and ends, but the word on this is that as soon as Donald Trump was elected, he got the hot idea to go back in time and look at a pivotal moment in American history when Katharine Graham had recently become publisher of the Washington Post. Her father had owned it, and then he gave it to her husband rather than her.
You're cringing at this whole
storyline. I am, but anyway, it's a true story, and I've read her biography, and her autobiography, which is excellent. And basically, at the moment that she was publisher, the Washington Post and the New York Times were confronted with the same issue, which is extremely relevant today, which is that they were experiencing pressure from the United States government to not publish papers that revealed that essentially the premise of the fog of war, that everybody in the United States...
The Errol Morris talk about
exactly,
McNamara.
Exactly. And then the military knew that there was no point and no winning the Vietnam War, essentially, even though their boys were all getting brought over there. So the dilemma that Katharine Graham was facing was who's played by the delicious Meryl Streep, and Tom Hanks, everyone's boyfriend but me, plays Bill Bradley.
They have an open marriage, by the way, I just read. Yeah. So that's
fantastic.
What you meant?
Yeah.
Who has an open marriage?
Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson.
And you believe this?
Well, I don't know. It's a big story.
Well, it would actually explain how they stayed married.
Possibly. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do
that. Anyway, wow. That was extremely timely.
But I want you know me.
Anyway,
I like to be salacious.
Basically, the premise is that she was experiencing pressure on every level, including from her own board of directors, to shut down the investigation and what the paper was reporting. And she ultimately made the right call. And it's clear why Spielberg would choose to tell this story now. And he really... He pushed it through a lot faster than he normally does. Well, 9 months.
I think that's good, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Well, we all went. You weren't at the screening.
I've seen it.
But you were at that. Were you at that big screening?
Bill, I was at one in the MGM room.
Okay. Well, Bill McCuddy.
Yeah, we
and
went
I
to
saw
an early one, and
which was really
the only reason that's worth bragging about is the whole cast was there, and they did a Q&A afterwards.
Right. That's correct. And what Spielberg said is that even shorter, that he got the script in April, which is remarkable, and turned that entire movie around. And, you know, we saw a finished print of it, Bill McCuddy and I, what it was like
November?
A month ago. Like, yeah,
the end of November, right?
I saw it then, too.
And when something like that would ordinarily, like you're Steven Spielberg, you know how to make movies, but I mean, you know, that would ordinarily take 2-3 years.
He did it at a Clint Eastwood pace.
So, you know, he found...
And actually, it feels different. Don't you guys feel like this movie
well,
looks
that's what I was
and feels
say.
Different?
I mean,
and I like it for
he
that.
He made a lean, meaner movie than he normally does. He didn't make it as gooey and Spielberg-y. For those reasons alone, I put it on my top 10 list, and we're going to talk next week about our best and worst movies of the year. But I like this movie enough, despite... I will take issue with the Katharine Graham character, who really kind of like doesn't come into her own until really late in the
but
movie.
But that's actually the whole point of the film. It's one of them.
But,
I like that.
I think the one scene that it comes down to is when they get the Pentagon Papers and they're in Ben Brantley's townhouse and they're trying to decide whether to publish or not. And you realize this doesn't have the gravity of Watergate. It doesn't have the gravity of the Roman Catholic Church diddling little boys. Yeah, I mean, it's there's a reason the Pentagon Papers hasn't been told for a long time. But you're right. It's an important film right now. And I think they really do a good job with it.
Yeah, and on the technical level, I was working in advertising around the time that this some of this was happening a little later.
You mean back in the 70s?
Back in the 70s, I had internships at ad agencies and stuff like that. And I was involved in something called hot type, linotype. All the stuff they show of putting the newspaper together is accurate, and they've actually found the one press left in the country that uses linotype.
Oh yeah, yeah. That is really cool. I'd forgotten about that.
It's the Playbill.
The
publication Playbill. When you go to a show in New York, and they give you a Playbill that it's printed with that machine. But do
it was. I don't think it is. I think this is like a museum now or something. I don't know where they found it, but it is really cool to watch.
I agree with both of you. I like the film. It would be on my top 10 list, which again we'll talk about next week's podcast. But you know, it first of all, from a production design standpoint, it's really great, and even greater when you find out how short of a turnaround time it took to make that particular film. There's a scene, just visually, when you see the papers coming off the press, and it's this conveyor belt that kind of like, it looks like a Rube Goldberg contraption.
Yeah. Right, that's what Bill was talking to.
And it kind of winds through this huge building, like up and down, like a ladder. If you could imagine like 15 ladders stacked up, and the papers are going up one ladder and down one ladder, and there's thousands of papers coming off it, and then you see the papers being delivered, and I kind of like that. Story-wise, yes, it was very interesting. It's very what I like about the film, and which is why I think that it will probably win, and we'll have our Oscar show down the line. Best Picture of the Year, not necessarily because it's worthy.
It will not win. This is not the year for that movie to win.
Hollywood
is very political, and it's it talks about freedom of the press, which is a real big issue these days with, you know, the whole fake news thing. So this just talks about how important a free press is, which I really liked about the movie as well. You know, us all being journalists, talking about how you need a free press. And also, Lisa, you would, as you mentioned, there's a strong central female character in the 1970s who's not taken that seriously, who inherits the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a timely topic, you know. So I think that both of those things are, but, you know, if you get away from the Oscar, whether it wins or not, I did really enjoy the movie. I don't think it's on the level of All the President's Men or Spotlight, which is also a big journalistic.
I love Spotlight.
You know, which was, you know, an amazing movie. But I think it's a very good movie. Not maybe great, but good is good.
I think its strength is its weakness in this case, because it has a very strong message to get across, and it does, yet it's a little pedantic. Like, it never, ever strays from its message. And I think its strength...
That's so Spielberg.
And it's funny because Spielberg usually has all these sort of soft, blurry edges, the sentimental things that ease that out. But here there's one. It's sinewy Spielberg.
There's one
so
that
there's
must
different.
Have turned your stomach a little when Catherine comes out of the Supreme Court and these women line up and are sort of in awe of her, like they're going to mosh pit her down to
Spielberg is
Constitution Avenue.
I mean, it's no Red Coat in Schindler's List, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, and in terms of Katharine Graham's character, I actually found that a very interesting decision to have her be weak, to have her be interest, like very used to having to say yes to everybody and defer to men and keep all these male egos soothed, and then suddenly realize that to do that would essentially be at the tremendous detriment of all these young people in America. And I like
I'm
going to finish my sentence. Mansplainer. Yeah. And I mean, I like watching her. Like, I like watching her develop. But at the same point, what we're dealing with is a weak, somewhat dull woman for most of the film.
Right. Who was not trusted by the stockholders, they said, because she was a woman. There's all of those button-pushing moments in the movie.
Which they managed to capture, and at the same time, not necessarily render her sympathetic. It's an interesting film in that way.
But
like,
not necessarily
a sympathetic film.
We spoke to Tom Hanks, Ben Bradley. And they were very close, actually, younger in their... Right. When Bradley was younger and wasn't in dementia, in the later part of his life, he was... He was not someone.
Really? His title, I guess, you would call editor in chief.
He was editor in chief.
She was the publisher.
Played also by, I thought Jason Robards was the better Ben.
Oh
Bradley.
Man, I love Jason in that role
in All the President's Men.
Oh,
but
so good.
Tom Hanks does an okay, does a decent job, you know.
Yeah.
So what did Tom Hanks?
We wanted to portray him as a real dyed-in-the-wool newspaper man.
You must get it right that day. Because if you're wrong, you're going to have to eat that inaccuracy for a very, very, very long time. If you do get it right, if you do tell the truth, the only thing you get from is the opportunity to try to do it again the very next day. So he's a newspaper man.
One of the interesting things about Brantley, and that Hanks has talked about before also, is that it was a local newspaper. I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while.
Absolutely true. Totally.
And it really, this story kind of put them, of course, then Watergate.
Yeah, it was the
and
there's a really cool Washington paper before this that was really...
The Washington Times, I
think? The Times, and there was the Star.
Right.
It was
the
a multiple newspaper town, just like New York City. But this is they keep making the point that this is a local paper, this will be a national story.
And and that also is really timely, because I have to say, with the advent of Donald Trump, like, I have gone back to reading the Washington Post every day. I mean, it's really made me think about...
They've stepped up their coverage.
I think right now the Post is the best paper in the country.
Well, the Post, you know, which I think is, you see in this movie, is the, you know, when you think of the preeminent newspapers in the United States, you think of the New York Times and the Washington Post. But the Watergate thing, not only this put them on the map, and the Watergate thing, I think, solidified.
There's
that.
A really
well,
cool
I love
Watergate
that last
nod.
End.
Yeah, we don't want to give too much away, but that ending shot might be the best shot in the whole movie.
And
it really is kind of like a catch me if you can, kind of a wink and a nod, smile at that moment. But I have to say, as a whole, you know, there's no deep throat. There's no there. All the elements that were in the Watergate thing.
It's not
just
as gripping of a story.
Well, and here's the thing: is that what they could have done and they didn't do was basically pull out the feminist angle more than they did. I agree that there's that maudlin shot where all those women are like, "Yes, Catherine," near the end. But the truth is that for the most part, the film suffers from the same malady that it's describing, which is that we're looking at a bunch of men surrounding a woman for the whole thing. We're not looking at that angle of her coming to. Or, you know, pushing forward any other female character. So it's also just
But as you point out, she's not that interesting. I shouldn't say not that interesting.
She's not. But my point is there are other... I mean, this film happened to have been co-written by a woman. Like, it would have been interesting if she had pulled out more of the feminist community around that was happening at the same time. I mean, this is the early
70s. It's got enough chick stuff in it, Toots.
You're an idiot with that sentence. You're just an idiot.
Get the little girl
selling lemonade.
It's not
even funny. You deserve to live with the dinosaurs.
So, All right. So, Bill, you recommend it?
Absolutely.
Bill McCuddy?
On my 10 best list.
It's on my top 40 list.
Top 40.
Thank you, Casey Kasem.
So what number would you give it?
I would give it like a 7.
I'm saying you put
it... Can you dance to it?
I'm saying yes, on your top 40 list, would you put it in like the top 20? Or you would really...
I would say that on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it a 7.
A 7. All right, I'd go higher than that. I'd go like 8 or 8.5 if we were doing that scale, on the scale of 1 to 10. But I do like the movie. Before we move on...
Why? Why before we move on?
Yeah, let's move on.
No, performances. Did you like Bob Odenkirk?
He's great.
Did you like Sarah Paulson, you know?
Yeah, there are a lot of... all the supporting characters are good.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
All right, moving on. Downsizing. All right, so I'm going to take the lead on this one. Okay. So here's...
One of your favorite filmmakers. Admit that up front.
I love Alexander Payne, who directed this movie. And, you know, I loved Election. I love that movie.
Sideways.
And I love Sideways. It was my favorite movie of the year that it came out.
Pinot Noir.
I wasn't that thrilled with Nebraska. So, you know, it's not...
No, Nebraska was good.
Well, I know you liked that. I wasn't that thrilled with that. But anyway, okay. So
you wanted to be in color, didn't you?
Here's a great premise. Here's a great premise, downsizing, that is not fully realized. Matt Damon and his wife, Kristen Wiig, are living in some suburban community somewhere.
Yeah, it's generic.
Omaha.
Experiencing tough financial times, but they're living comfortably. But apparently there's this new found science thing where you could shrink people down to the size, I don't know, how big are these people? Like the size of a
five
soda?
Inches.
6 inches,
size
5 inches.
Soda
inch,
can,
yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah. Size doesn't matter, Neil.
Keep it to yourself.
No, they're like six
inches. It matters.
Inches.
And they live in... these hermetically sealed communities, and everything is cheaper. For example, if you get a big diamond, in the real world that we live in, it's an interesting premise, you know? Diamond costs $20,000, but if you just chip off like a little, you know, fraction of that thing, you know, it could be like $100 or something like that. I'm having a difficult time explaining this. Why don't you pick up the rest of this explanation?
The world is overcrowded. This technology comes along. People think they can live better in these little biodomes.
And they'll deplete the world's resources less.
The gases, everything will be So it's considered a noble thing. And Matt Damon and his wife, for selfish reasons, but also for noble reasons, decide to go through this process. And then the rest of the movie largely takes place in the small world.
So this is the problem with the movie for me. The problem with the movie is once they, the first 40 minutes, I'm finding this very interesting. Should we get shrunk down? Their friend played by...
There's a huge twist
by
about...
By Saturday Night Live alum Jason Sudeikis.
Our favorite.
They're all, you know, and they have a reunion, and he's like the size of like a soda can, and he's standing on the table telling everybody, you know...
It's the greatest. We have this.
And it's irreversible. Once you get shrunk down, you can't go the other way. And, you know, you can live in these big mansions and, you know, do I give away the spoiler of what happens once he's...
No.
Okay.
No.
But this is the problem is that the first spoiler is about 12 minutes into
the
movie.
Right, right. And that's the thing I don't want to tell people, although it's kind of in the trailer. Look, let's cut to the chase here. This is a really good idea, but I did not really enjoy it.
Well, I think that once he gets to the small community, it doesn't matter that he's in the small community. I mean, other than the fact, because everybody is to scale. Everybody is the same size.
Right.
So you're kind of, for the most part, ignoring this premise. He has this...
You want Stuart Little. You want more of the little
person
with the big people.
No, I'm saying in the beginning, when you're seeing the contrast, I mean, there's a couple of interesting shots. He's sitting in an airplane. There's a little section for people in an airplane.
Right.
So, you know, the window, the size of a window in an airplane.
This is like
a floor-to-ceiling window for them because they're only like 6 inches tall.
The last hour is about whether or not they're going to go down into underneath the earth.
Right. He has an upstairs noisy neighbor played by Christoph Waltz who's having parties. He invites him. So this doesn't even have to be about small people after a certain particular point. It just becomes a regular story, and I find that story to be boring. So I do not like this movie. I could not wait for it to end, although the first 40 minutes I was engaged in it. But after a while, I was like...
Tough year for Matt Damon,
really...
we should say, huh?
I think this film suffers from three maladies. One is that it's a real Shaggy Dog story. I mean, the fact that we're having such a hard time distilling the plot is because it just keeps on doing twist after twist, none of them being particularly interesting. So you just, after a while, I felt like, wow, I could really wander in the other room, get a soda, miss a pivotal plot point, and not care at all. And the other thing is, and this is a larger issue, I think, with Alexander Payne, which is that one of his little tricks is he takes, with the exception of Reese Witherspoon, he takes extremely charismatic actors and makes them seem like the dullest, most depressed versions of themselves. From George Clooney to Jack Nicholson and now Matt Damon. I know some people like this aspect of them, but I actually hate it. And this film is the best example yet of him not being able to transcend that tendency of his. I mean, Matt Damon was positively gray on every level. He was so hard to watch. It wasn't just the plot. I mean, he was just such a depressed guy. And we're supposed to think he's a good guy, but I did not care.
He gave up being in Manchester by the Sea for this.
I know.
Seriously.
He did.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Which would have really...
He was the producer of that. So
yeah, for which,
took himself
for which
out
is,
of it.
For which someone won an Oscar. So Casey Affleck. So, I mean, the other thing is like, you know,
did
you have
say
a
movie. Oscar?
Yeah,
she
we're
did.
From Boston.
I mean, you
have a movie like Her, or you have, you know, all these films that are slightly sci-fi, slightly set in the future, and they have these weirdo premises that they like sci-fi.
Her
premises.
Was so much better.
Right, and that's my point, is that they take these weirdo ideas and they make the absolute best of them. I felt like this movie went the opposite direction. It did nothing with its cool idea.
I feel like from Payne's career, that this is too big an idea. His
Absolutely.
Other movies are smaller
Absolutely.
Ideas. Election is a little girl that a teacher can't stand.
And it's based on a book, so it's a good plot.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the core,
Tracy
all
Flick.
Of the pain, Nebraska
Pick,
is just, Nebraska is just, let's get on a road trip and go get our winning, you know, from the Publishers Clearing House thing.
Plot.
This thing has way too many
Sideways
gears
is a
turning.
Small idea. It's just
yeah,
too old.
I think
also
he's bad
with
that. Go to wineries. And
let's face
it's
it.
So
Mr.
bad
Payne,
it's driving me to
plot is not your strength.
Thanks for the beer.
Yeah, he's drinking seltzer.
It's seltzer.
But, it's LaCroix. Yes, LaCroix. But, sorry, we're trying to get sponsors.
Yeah, but do you agree with me that in the beginning it was least. The first, like, until he moves into the community.
It's a cool idea.
The whole, like, he's with Kristen Wiig, they're deciding whether to do it, something
And the first big twist, right, is really cool also.
Really interesting. And, you know, then then it's the whole recovery from being, you know.
I mean, this is basically a completely unexplored concept.
But once he moves into this community, which is, I'd say, at least 70, if not more, percent of the film, it's because There's no interaction between big people and small people. It could be anything. You could have just set that story in regular
point
size
made
people.
Several times. So and, now, who did we talk to?
I'm saying, do you agree
yes,
with that?
Yes, I do. That's what I
do
said
you
as
agree
well.
With that?
We didn't talk to anybody.
So I don't like the movie. Would you recommend this?
Absolutely not.
How about you? How about you,
not.
Bill?
No. But annoying characters show up, which we left out. But I agree with you. The first part of it's very interesting. The last half of it, the only part I really like toward the end, I don't know if it gives anything. Let's just say there's a very interesting explosion at the end that reminds you that everything really is small.
There's also a house cleaner.
There's another big idea that's struggling to get out of this
without telling you
movie.
Where that goes. There's a house cleaner character that
it just goes on and on and on.
Friendship with, let's say, Matt Damon's character. And that's not particularly interesting to me either. And as you said, Bill, they go on some voyage towards the end of the movie, and that just by that point, I'm like, I can't wait for this.
See, Alexander Payne has a tendency to moralize in all his films, and in this movie in particular, he does not deserve the moral authority he assumes.
Let's move on to Maggie's Game.
I like
and,
that.
And who would like to describe what that movie's about?
Sure. Starts off with the premise, which I really find interesting. Because I know some of these people, that the worst thing you can do in sports is to be fourth in the Olympics. and this is Aaron Sorkin telling this story, so he goes into a lot of detail about that. And then you realize the story's actually about a woman who suffered that fate, got injured, needed another job, really had no skill other than skiing, and takes up with a rather nasty man who... alongside being an agent or a showbiz type person?
Something related to showbiz is not really clear.
Right. She also has to host his poker games, which are quite interesting and sort of high stakes rollers on the Hollywood.
Based
circuit.
On a real game.
Yeah, based on a real game. And
my brother-in-law played in that game.
Wow. And the New York one or the Hollywood?
No, the Hollywood one.
Oh, cool. So.
He's
these
got
games
money,
are going on. She eventually
game.
Splits from the agent, goes off to New York, starts her own game, and gets in trouble because some Russian mafia members are among the poker players. So she needs a lawyer. And she goes and gets one, and there's a lot of back and
played
forth.
Played by Idris Elba. Hello,
yes.
Don't bury your lead, man.
Yep.
No, which is one of the problems of the film from my standpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
They,
that's why
because they
not
wrote
my
a bigger
lead.
Part for a star is all I'm going to say. Like that role did not need to
kind
be that big. But anyway,
role.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a lot of back and forth about the trial, and the film also has the longest voiceover narration I have ever listened to.
It's an Aaron Sorkin movie.
Yeah.
Well, get Lisa.
Okay, I just want to say that contrary to almost everyone I've talked about this, I really love this movie, and I've watched it like four times. Number one is
really?
Wow.
I love this movie. Jessica Chastain plays Molly Bloom, who's the main character, who, let's be clear, this is a true story, and I've also read her memoir, so I'm super interested in this. And just to be clear, she did have some skills. She was about to enter Harvard Law, and then she decided to take a year off and help out in L.A.
That wasn't in the film, though.
Yeah, it is in the film. It? Yeah. And so basically she takes a little bit of time off, you know, decides to hang out in L.A. and she gets hooked into this weird scenario where she's working as assistant to this dude who in real life ran a very popular poker game in the basement of the Viper Room, which incidentally is where River Phoenix died. So it's very Sorkin. I totally agree with you. And it's, which means it's got the snappy dialogue, the constant, I mean, there's probably, like, if you looked at a Sorkin script compared to a regular script, it's probably seven times the regular
stuff. It's all dialogue.
No, Jessica talked about that at lunch the other day.
Yes, we went to
lunch, 240 pages instead of 100.
And we also should say, this is the first film that Aaron Sorkin has ever directed. He's been writing for years and years and years, and he even was a showrunner for two TV shows, but this is the first time he directed. I'm surprised to say, I think he's really good at it. Like, he kept it going, and the other thing about this movie that I really thought was interesting is that this is the first time where his central characters are, let's just be blunt, a person of color and a woman. And there's something about the fact that I think Sorkin was, for the first time, had two different mouthpieces that he couldn't just like identify with automatically, that made him pull back some of his worst egotistical impulses and in fact be a little bit more.
I don't agree with that.
He went on forever. Yeah. The guy needed an editor.
That is,
I love that.
Absolutely.
I agree with you
100%. What does that mean, went on forever? The movie isn't even that long.
No, it is long.
How long is it?
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes.
And don't it, yeah, it was. And don't you consider him to be a misogynistic writer? writer usually, and that because he had a woman at the lead, he gave another big role.
No,
to
that's what I'm saying. I'm saying he curbed his worst impulses because I think he put it. I think he very wisely built in a natural corrective, which is that rather than have another white guy trumpet his views, he brought in a female story about a woman and her agency, and he brought in a black man who was the attorney, which is true. And he basically, I think, got out of his own way.
Okay,
a black man who works for the world's largest one-man law firm I've ever seen in my life. He's the only lawyer in the whole place. He and his daughter are there. You admit the storyline with the daughter is like completely unnecessary.
I liked it. I did not mind.
Okay, so Kevin Costner's in the movie as the dad who, you know, they keep flashing back.
He plays Molly Bloom's dad, to be clear.
Psychiatrist.
Right, he plays a psychiatrist.
And they keep flashing back to her childhood, which is, we get insight into her issues.
He's a tough dad.
But here's the deal, okay? I couldn't agree more with you, Bill Brigoli, and you, Bill McCuddy. Aaron Sorkin has always written for other directors, where other directors, you know, have final cut and they edit the movie down. This guy, in your words exactly, Bill Brigoli, needed an editor. It was 2 hours and 20 minutes. It felt a lot longer. I thought a lot of the scenes in there were kind of repetitive and redundant. It could
in
have
his office. Admit that.
No,
in the lawyer's office with her.
By the way, I don't try to
all times, which is insane.
He's rereading her book or reading it for the first time. We're not sure because in the beginning he says he's read her book, and then all through the movie he's reading her book back to her.
No, he does not say he read it, but nothing you're saying is actually
true. Absolutely
no,
true.
He says in the beginning that his daughter is familiar with her story, that he's not heard of her, and then he's reading the book because she becomes his client. To be clear, he knows almost nothing about her at the beginning of the film. That's made clear. Like, it's fine if you want to put me down, but on the other hand, I actually know the story.
First of all, he has written Aaron Sorkin for women, a really good women's part. If you used to watch The West Wing, Allison Janney.
Yeah, Allison Janney was literally the last time.
The press secretary.
First of all, I didn't say he didn't write well for women. I'm saying he has been misogynistic, which is those two facts are not mutually exclusive. I mean, The Newsroom was a disaster on the female tip. It was a pure disaster.
All right. Look, I think it's too long. But that said, I like the movie. I don't hate the movie. I mean, it's okay. I like Aaron Sorkin's rat-a-tat kind of style of dialogue.
Yeah, totally.
And I enjoy that in any movie that he's doing, whether it's the Steve Jobs movie or, you know, The Social Network. I enjoy that.
Had different directors.
I honestly like this movie so much better than that one.
Didn't he write both of those screenplays?
Yeah,
and he wrote The American President, which was a Rob Reiner film, you know. You know, he's written a lot of stuff. I gravitate to that dialogue. I just think there were too many. See, you thought there were too many scenes in the lawyer's office. I thought there were too many card game scenes. I think
the card game scenes.
It's like by the 8th card game scene, it's like I kind of got it here, you know. And there's a couple of interesting scenes. There's one character in one of the card games who's kind of like a loser, and you kind of follow him.
He was just sitting in the card game
because he was trying to put deals together.
Right.
You know, he didn't care that he was losing.
How about Michael Cera playing the Tobey Maguire character.
It's more interesting to me that looking it up afterwards, who are the real people?
That's part of what's interesting about this story is that Molly Bloom, after she got busted by the feds to pay her bills, she wrote a memoir in which she named names. And two of the people in this game are Leo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire, who turns out to be a real psycho. And he's played by Michael Cera, which is one of the funnier casting swaps I can possibly think of.
Yeah, no, it is fascinating to think this was real, but I think that it could have been shorter. I think we could have had fewer games, and I'm a guy who loves that sort of thing normally, and I like Sorkin as a writer. I just don't love him as a director.
Right, you love poker. You know,
Poker movies, and I love law, and I love courtroom movies. So this was just my cup of tea.
I can't believe you saw this thing 4 times.
Jessica Chastain was made to deliver Aaron Sorkin's
lines. She's
the perfect combination.
There's no question about that. You know, I'm not a big Michael Cera fan, but I liked him not playing the nerdy guy. He was kind of like a
predator,
a prick in this particular
movie. He was a predator.
You know what I mean? And there's other people that were in this game, as you were saying, Bill. Like, I don't know if you want to mention them. You might not want to mention them. The people in the real game.
No, I mean, there was Pete Sampras used to come sometimes.
Uh-huh.
My brother-in-law was there a bunch, and he hosted sometimes at his house.
The guy who directed The Hangover went to a lot of them. I forgot his name.
Yeah, Nick Cassavetes.
Todd Phillips
was another one that played in this game. So.
Yeah, so what is weird.
And the draw into the game was the fact that, you know, the people that were not famous were just rich. We're like, hey, you could sit down at the game with these celebrities. You know what I'm saying?
And that's the LA game. The New York game is a whole other Russian mafia mess.
I preferred the movie when it was in L.A. When they moved to the moved the game to New York to the Plaza Hotel.
But from a plot standpoint, she had to change her business model, and that's what brought her down, and that's why they had to do the New York part, right?
Yes, and also she started doing drugs.
All right, so obviously,
it's not illegal to run an illegal game if you don't take a piece of the pot.
That's right.
Obviously,
that's right.
Lisa recommends
it. I think it's awesome.
And that would be, I guess, on your top 10 list. You know?
No, it's on my top 10 adaptations list.
Okay, well, we're going to get next week to the top 10 list. Bill, would you recommend this movie? Bill McCuddy.
No.
Bill Brigoli.
I actually would.
Yay.
Yeah. I mean, see,
come to my dark side.
You're in for a long schlock.
Yeah. Here's what I'd say. I'd say if you're a really big Aaron Sorkin fan.
But
and
I'm
like,
not.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, then.
If you're a Jessica Chastain
fan. I would recommend it, but I think it's better off if you wait till it comes to streaming, on demand, HBO. But, you know, if you're a real big fan of Aaron Sorkin or this particular subject matter, there is a really nice scene with Kevin Costner. Did you like that end scene with Kevin Costner?
That's the worst scene in the movie.
You hate that scene. Okay, so we're obviously not on the same page with this particular movie. But we are on the sex that I would barely I would kind of recommend it, sure.
Neil, you know? Apparently we need to watch it 3 more times.
There you go.
Because it doesn't sink in.
I'm fascinated by the story. I am.
All right, so anyway, we're cutting it short. Listen next week because we got a nice long show. We're going to do 10 best and worst films of the year, TV shows of the year, everything.
Let me just say that Hugh Jackman as The Greatest Showman.
Oh, yes, The Greatest Showman.
Is a better movie. You guys didn't see it. I just did.
Briefly.
I watched it with a real paying crowd, including a lot of kids. It got applause at the end. And it's everything you expect in a giant, what some people will hate, but popcorny kind of movie, and I was really surprised.
Right on.
So it's even though it's not Disney, it's a Disney-esque kind of film with musical numbers.
Yeah, I guess. And I mean, it's no La La Land, it's no Moulin Rouge.
Would it appeal to adults?
I saw it with two schools. I saw it with real people in two schools.
Does it have that multi-layer aspect where adults will like it, or is it strictly for families?
No, it's adults will like it
as
well.
Hugh Jackman as P.T.
Barnum. He's great. Hugh Jackman's so awesome.
Oh, you saw the movie?
No, I just think in general he's awesome.
Well, we love Hugh
Jackman. He's such a performer.
All right. So for Bill Brigoli,
yeah.
Bill McCuddy.
The show must go on.
Lisa Rossman. Did I say Rossman?
No, I'm
he'll
just
get
saying my name this way now.
Someday.
And me, Neil Rosen. 10 best show next week, and ten and some worst as well. We won't really do 10 best. We're going to do the best and worst of the year. We're not going to limit it lock in on.
This
on
is your 10. Idea of wrapping it up?
All right. Thanks.
Later, Gators.
I'm Neil Rosen. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll talk movies again with you with our best of show next week.